Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, the big news of the day, the annual WISO Open House. It's just a few hours away, and our WISO webmaster, Kaleidoscope, and Alpharhythms host, Juliet Fromholtz, will be here to fill us in on the details. Later in the program, Bill Felker with Poor Will's Miami Valley Almanac. Up first, Republicans are coming to Cleveland in 2016. On Tuesday, the Republican National Committee announced heavily Democratic Cleveland will host the GOP's presidential convention, beating out the heavily Republican city of Dallas. As WKSU's Kevin Niedermeyer reports, bipartisanship, teamwork, and community spirit are being credited for the decision.
The last time Cleveland hosted a major political convention was 1936, and the city narrowly lost its bid to host the GOP's 2008 convention. Since the last attempt, Cleveland has beefed up its ability to attract big events with a new convention center, a casino, and hundreds more hotel rooms, some of which are still being built. After the announcement that Cleveland will host the 2016 Republican convention, Mayor Frank Jackson credited these factors, but said there was more to the decision.
And we showed them that we were hungry for this and that we wanted this, and that if they came to Cleveland, they would be the centerpiece not only of Cleveland but the entire region. And when they went around the city, as they were doing their site visit, people would say hello to them. They would give them thumbs up. So they knew it just wasn't coming from us as a team. It was the entire community that was welcoming them and saying, we hope you pick Cleveland.
Jackson also credits the local Republican minority working with the Democratic majority. And Democratic Cuyahoga County Executive Ed Fitzgerald is credited with visiting the 2012 Democratic Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, to find out what worked and what didn't, and bringing that information back to Cleveland. Jackson says much work still needs to be done to ensure the event is safe and to get the proper infrastructure in place. Cleveland Host Committee Chairman Terry Eggert says the committee and the RNC will now hammer out a contract, one he says local officials have already started working on to eliminate possible sticking points.
They've been going over these issues now for the last couple of days, trying to get as many knocked out of the way, should we have been chosen, which we were. So they will come back to town either tomorrow or the next day and sit down, and we'll begin to look at all the deal points that go into a contract. We need to, and will have, with them, worked out a contract that we both agreed to sign with the host committee and the RNC. They will then take that to their convention, which will be in Chicago on the 7th through the 9th of August. That will be voted on there, and then that would officially seal the deal.
And Eggers says Cleveland is well on its way to raising the $55 to $60 million required to host the event. Many consider the prospect of turning local undecided voters Republican for the 2016 election a factor that helped Cleveland win the convention. University of Akron political scientist John Green says 5 to more than 10% of undecided voters can be convinced to vote with the party holding its convention in their town. He says that's especially important in a swing state like Ohio, where the last few presidential elections have been close. And Green says holding its convention in Cleveland may show what the Republicans' overall 2016 strategy will be.
And Ohio, being a close battleground state, is the kind of place where a more moderate Republican message, one that appeals to independents and the people who are more moderate politically, is likely to fit very well having a convention in Cleveland. So all of the things being equal, it's likely to be a boost to the local Republicans and to the Republican national presidential ticket. But of course, a lot depends on exactly what they do at the convention. And playing to the themes that work in Ohio are likely to work in other battleground states.
The week-long convention is expected to bring about 50,000 people to Cleveland and pump around $200 million into the local economy. City officials are also excited about what effect the hours of national and international media exposure will have on Cleveland's image. Cleveland is still in the running for the 2016 Democratic presidential convention. Though no official announcement has been made, the city is expected to drop out of that race, leaving Columbus to compete with 5 other cities for the Democrats' event.
For Ohio Public Radio, I'm Kevin Niedermeyer in Cleveland.
Sinclair Community College in Dayton has announced a partnership with Ohio State University on its Unmanned Aerial Systems, or drone, program. The college recently got news of a $4 million grant from the state to improve its facilities for teaching about drones. Now they'll team up with Ohio State to offer people who get UAS certificates or associate degrees options to complete a degree at Ohio State in data analytics or geospatial precision agriculture. and OSU students will be able to take classes at Sinclair to earn a certificate or degree. At a press conference last week, I spoke with David Williams, Dean of Ohio State's Engineering Department, about the new partnership and details of the UAS technology's use in precision agriculture.
Partnerships between research universities and community colleges are very important for the economic development of any region, and our partnership with Sinclair College is just that. We see unmanned aerial systems as a great economic development opportunity, and so we are partnering in order that we can grow this technology and help drive the economy, not just of the Dayton area, but of the whole state of Ohio.
There was a lot of talk about collaborating. Tell me what is involved in keeping those directives aligned with each of these organizations.
Sure. Sinclair Community Colleges, like most community colleges, is concerned about training the workforce for the jobs that are coming in the future. And here is an area where we believe there's going to be great growth, not just in the Dayton area, but across the nation. At research universities, we also educate students. However, in many cases, we educate them to be at the forefront of the technology and developing new technologies. And the combination here of the unmanned aerial systems themselves, the data that they generate in the whole field of data analytics, and particularly the application to precision agriculture, those are three areas where Ohio State is already deeply committed in terms of hiring new faculty, developing new curricula and new degree programs. So we span the whole range of the educational spectrum from associate's degree through to PhD, and that's why these partnerships are so beneficial.
A lot of times with UAS talk, there's a lot of technology involved. So for the average listener, what does this mean for them? And when you talk about precision agriculture, perhaps some examples.
Sure. The technology necessary to both build and fly and control these unmanned aerial systems and to measure the data that they generate requires combinations of aerospace engineering, computer science, electrical engineering, materials engineering, and so on. So there's a lot of fundamentals to actually just developing this kind of technology. In precision agriculture, what we are doing here is we're enabling farmers to improve their yields by understanding the conditions where they lay down each individual seed. Because the complexity of modern-day farm machinery is such that they plant seed by seed and they know the chemistry of the soil, they can alter the chemistry of the soil, improve the water content or the fertilizer content, so they can maximize the chance that each seed will produce the appropriate crop and most efficiently. And so understanding how the soil chemistry varies across a particular field, this kind of information comes through UAS technology and satellite technology, but it's somewhat cheaper perhaps for the farmer to have his or her own UAS rather than relying on a GPS system that they don't control. So there are advantages to having drones flying around your own individual fields and interfacing with your own farm equipment.
How far along is this technology?
It is being used, it is generating data, and farm machinery is computerized and linked to GPS systems in such a way that what I just described is already happening. Is there opportunity for great improvements? There is, and that's why we're here.
Great. Dean Williams, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So drones are coming, and experts say the aviation industry is growing too. And that means hundreds of thousands of openings for qualified job seekers. Ohio Public Radio's Karen Kessler reports experts in the state known as the birthplace of aviation say now's the time to launch efforts to fill those jobs.
500,000 pilots will be needed around the world in the next 20 years, according to aircraft manufacturer Boeing.
And that's just for the commercial airlines. Far more pilots are needed for every other aspect of the aviation industry, as well as airport managers are needed, air traffic controllers, engineers, the gamut.
Seth Young is the director of aviation studies at Ohio State University. He says the pilot shortage is the most visible one in the industry, traceable to a growth in aviation around the world and cutbacks in the U.S. military, where many pilots in the past have gotten their training. But to turn learning to fly in a small propeller plane into taking a jet into the skies isn't easy. There's math and physics and engineering courses. And it isn't cheap. It can cost well over $100,000 for college-level flight training. And most graduates end up with only around 250 hours of flight time. So they work as flight instructors to build up the time they need to get hired as commercial pilots. And when that happens, the salary often starts around $20,000 a year. But Young sees it like a career in medicine.
When you spend a lot of money going through college and medical school, you end up in a residency program where you'll work hard, long hours, and don't get paid that much. But at the end of the day, you have a tremendously lucrative and successful career. Aviation is basically the same thing.
And there are problems filling other aviation positions, such as air traffic controllers. Richard Mangrum is an associate professor of aeronautics at Kent State University. He says the ATC shortage is already hitting, with as many as 13,000 controllers needed in the next few years. And Mangrum says the impact of unfilled positions all across the industry is going to hit travelers soon, especially those who fly on the smaller regional airlines.
They're going to start parking airplanes. That would probably trigger a increase in prices because of the lack of availability of route structure. And if there's not trained air traffic controllers, then it doesn't matter how many pilots there are. We're going to have safety issues.
And Mangrum says airports get revenue from airlines, so when there are fewer planes operating, there's less money for airport maintenance. To try to handle the coming crisis, the aviation industry is working with flight departments at colleges and universities and with flight schools to encourage more kids to consider all sorts of career options in aviation. And they're working with programs such as Youth Aviation Adventure, which operates 28 locations in 17 states, including at Ohio State's Don Scott Airport. Executive Director Tim Beach runs a one-day program that brings in scouting and other youth groups.
To show them that there are other career paths out there in aviation other than being pilots. Pilots are very important, but there are thousands of other jobs in aviation that they should know about.
And there are potentially plenty of aviation jobs in Ohio. Young from Ohio State says Ohio industries are the number one and number two suppliers to aircraft manufacturers Boeing and Airbus. There are 80 public use airports in Ohio. The airspace overseen by air traffic controllers in the Cleveland area is among the busiest in the nation. And Ohio is home to several charter operators and two fractional jet companies, including the Warren Buffett-owned NetJets in Columbus, which has the largest private jet fleet in the world. Karen Kessler, The Ohio Public Radio, State House News Bureau.
Perhaps some of those needed workers will come from right here in the Miami Valley. Springfield's former South High School, built in the early 1900s, is on its way to becoming an educational hub for students. Recently, a consortium of four local schools received $11.3 million from the state's Straight A Grant program for the renovation. South High School will now be called the Greater Springfield Career Connect Ed Center. WISO's Wayne Baker spoke with Josh Jennings, the director of the Global Impact STEM Academy, one of the partners in the project, about the hub and the academy's progress.
Well, I know you guys have been on the campus of Clark State for a while, and now it looks like you're going to have an interesting partnership there at Springfield South High School. Can you talk about that and how that came about?
Right. Well, as a facility, a long-term facility for this school, our school and a great partner in helping us achieve our goals, as well as Clark State Community College and others that have been on board from the beginning as well. And so we've been very fortunate to have not only a partnership with Springfield City, but also with Clark State Community College in terms of lending support to our school and working with us closely to develop our facility needs, both the short term with Clark State and the long term also with what will be in the former South High building. The educational hub, if you will, that will be that was part of the Straight A grant that is being awarded, will do a couple different things. Number one, give us a permanent home. But then number two, just offer a center of innovation and also career and college readiness support for students across our county with the partnering schools that were part of this grant, which includes Springfield Clark CTC and the Clark Shawnee School District, Springfield City Schools, and Global Impact STEM Academy.
Talk about certainly what this means for the south side of Springfield, having That school closed for quite some time now. This sort of reinvigorates that area.
This will be a win-win across the board for not only our school and the students that we serve, but also, I believe, for the community in which that will impact as well. I mean, it's the southern gateway into Springfield and a majestic facility, to say the least, one with some historical significance for the community. And we hope that the work we do with students in our school, you know, will really impact that community, but then also give our students opportunity to engage the local community as well. So we feel like it's a perfect location in terms of where it's located to help meet our needs and what we want to do.
I've seen a national report that was just released stating that a lot of companies need STEM-educated graduates. So this must be very encouraging for the STEM school to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a there's a need, not only broader sense of STEM-related disciplines and students becoming trained in those disciplines and the opportunities that are related to them, but also within the focus that we do here in terms of the bioscience end of things. And so there is definitely a specific industry and workforce development niche that we're trying to fill and connect our students to, so that not only will they be prepared by going through a very rigorous curriculum, but also not only prepared for college, but going through that curriculum, but also prepared for careers that are very in high demand, that are also high wage and high skill.
And how is the STEM school doing?
Well, we just finished up our first year, and we started the year with ninth grade only. And our hope and goal was to build a class a year. And next year will be 9 and 12, and where we started with 50 students last year, and are very close to meeting those enrollment projections and actually fulfilling all the seats that we actually have spots for 150 students for next coming fall. So we have about 98% of our students returning. I guess you would say that we've tripled in size in a year. So we're really encouraged. The staff's doing great things. We had an incredible group of students that we started the school year off, and the energy's high, the interest is high. We're very excited about how all that's tying into to the school and community and the students that we serve.
When should the South High School facility, the educational hub, be up and running?
We will be in there fall of 2015. So we will be at Clark State for this coming school year while the construction process begins and starts, and continue to grow from there as the construction process and project allows and the time frame allows.
Still accepting open enrollment there? Still accepting students?
Still accepting a limited amount of students. So anybody who is interested, there are only a few spots available. So interested students need to get online or at globalimpactacademy.org or call us here at the office to seek more information or to go ahead and apply to ensure themselves a spot for next year.
Josh, thank you very much for your time and the detailed information, and good luck in the educational hub.
Yeah, hey, thanks a lot.
WISO's Wayne Baker speaking with Josh Jennings, director of the Global Impact STEM Academy. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. And actually, what we're hoping that you'll do later this afternoon is join us for the WYSO annual open house here at 150 East South College Street in Yellow Springs. And we're going to talk about some details with our very own Juliet Fromhold. Juliet, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jerry. I'm really looking forward to seeing everybody out at the open house this afternoon.
This is actually a pretty popular event with our listeners.
It is, yeah. We started it 2 years ago when we moved into our new building here in the Kettering Building on Antioch College's campus, and it's become a family favorite event for listeners. We have a lot of people that bring their kids out and really look forward to coming year after year. Typically, right about the time it gets warm, I get listeners asking me, oh, what's going to be at open house this year? So we're really excited for you and your families to come out and join us.
Well, let's give them a rundown, and then let's talk about some details.
open house is, as you said, 2 to 6 p.m. here at the WISO studios in Yellow Springs. And there'll be a live broadcast from 2 to 4 p.m. that Nikki Dakota will be hosting. That's going to feature some live music, including performances from Todd the Fox, from John Morgan, a really great singer-songwriter from Lancaster, Ohio, and Negative Ghostwriter, a really great rock band from right here in the Miami Valley. You'll also, in addition to seeing radio being made, you'll have an opportunity to record your very own greeting for WISO here in our studios. Some of our Community Voices producers will be on hand to help you with that. You can ask a question for Why So Curious, and you can also get a tour of our studios.
We've also got food trucks and some entertainment outside the studios as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, in addition to all of the great radio, you can eat some great food. Voodoo Tacos bringing their truck out, a really great newer food truck from the Miami Valley. Ben and Jerry's on Brown Street is bringing an ice cream cart. And I hear tell that they're going to be making waffle cones right here, wow, live for you, which I'm really excited about personally.
Live broadcast, live waffle cones.
Live waffle cones, I know. In addition to that, we've got lots of activities for the kids. The Yellow Springs Fire Department has very generously offered to give fire truck rides for the young and the young at heart.
Nice.
So you'll be able to do that. We've got Rowdy Rod, the clown, who is coming out. He's going to be making balloon animals and doing some face painting. We're going to have other games for the kids out on the back lawn here at WISO, and it's going to be a great time. And if you're worried about missing the World Cup, we're even going to be beaming that, projecting that live here in the studio, so
That's
you won't
great.
Miss the score.
That's great. So also staff and volunteers giving tours of the station. If you have not seen our facilities, it's a great chance to come up, enjoy some good food, good music, and get a tour. See where WISO is made.
You know, we have a lot of people who have not gotten a chance to see our new studios yet, or, you know, have been in to drop something off, but haven't really gotten to kind of find out how this all works. And our tours are really fun. Our staff and volunteers are really knowledgeable, and you'll really get a sense of how radio is made here at WISO. You'll have a really nice visual to accompany what you're hearing each and every day when you're listening to us on the air.
That's great. Nikki Dakota is going to be hosting a couple of hours live while our musicians play, correct?
Yes. 2 to 4 p.m. we'll have live music interspersed, as well as she'll be spinning a lot of local music. You'll be able to see and hear these performances. So if you're a fan of the live music on WISO and you're curious how that all happens in terms of how we get these instruments to sound good on the air and arrange them as such, you'll be able to see that in the studio, in the performance space, watch it as it's happening.
Live music is actually a big part, once again, of what WISO brings to the community. We've got in-studio performances with Nikki all through the week. Also with you, Juliet, on Wednesday nights during Kaleidoscope. And now Shakin' Dave on Monday nights is doing a hall pass once a month with live music in studio.
Dave just started in February doing a last Monday of every month Shakes Hall Pass. And it's been really, really fun. I know he's got some great acts lined up for the rest of the summer. Additionally, Tom Duffy has live music every once in a while on the Midnight Ramble. Cindy Funk will have a Celtic act in on Saturday afternoon. Sometimes Norm's got a folk artist in on Saturdays as well. Part of the reason we're able to do so much of that now is because we have this really beautiful performance space that a lot of people haven't gotten to see yet, but it's very, very impressive.
Juliet, let's hear some music from one of our afternoon performers.
During the live broadcast, we're going to have Todd the Fox, who's a favorite of WISO listeners. We've also got John Morgan, who's a really great singer-songwriter, who we just introduced to listeners a couple of weeks ago on Kaleidoscope. And the band you're going to hear right now is Negative Ghostwriter. They're a newer Miami Valley band that I just became aware of and had them on Kaleidoscope a few weeks ago. Really enjoyed their performance. What you're going to hear now is their full electric band. They're going to be doing a modified kind of acoustic set with some modified instrumentation. So you'll get a slightly different flavor, but still that same great music. So we'll take a listen to one of their songs that they performed live on Kaleidoscope a few weeks ago here on WISO.
Great. Juliet, thanks so much for filling us in on the details.
Thanks so much, Jerry. Looking forward to seeing everybody this afternoon here at WISO.
Negative Ghostwriter on WISO Weekend.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. I wonder if she's gone to stay. Cause ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away.
Music from Negative Ghost Rider playing live in studio in just a couple of hours at the WYSO open house from 2 to 6 p.m. today. We hope to see you there. This is WYSO Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the third week of middle summer. My interest in gardening began with a few lettuce seeds and then progressed to a minor manifestation of voyeuristic back-to-the-landism. And now, it's taken on a life of its own. And of course, nothing is as simple as it seems. What starts out as a pleasant journey into food or flowers can quickly become complicated by the addition of just a small amount of neurosis and self-doubt. The process of gardening, like all processes in which new life comes to be, is something elemental and something primal. And it has to do not only with food and self-sufficiency, with space and color and order and purpose, but also with disease and the dangers of cold and heat and drought and flooding. Existentially, the garden is a jungle of options. Here lies the angst that the 20th century philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre talked about, the anguish in the face of the whole universe to be made by our word, made into the flesh of tomatoes and zinnias, made by our word without appeal, without a model, and without a guide. And what if we fail? What if the vision is imperfect? What if we're not up to the task? What if we don't have enough time? And what if everything eventually falls apart and becomes overgrown and all the precious things get swallowed up by the rank interlopers? What if? What if? Well, see what I mean. There's something about the tangled lushness of July that can overrun my mind like kudzu. Something that pushes me until I'm caught in a synaptic snarl and I founder in the sticky vines of cerebral summer. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the fourth week in middle summer. In the meantime, don't think about all this too much. You'd be better off.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at WYSO.org. WYSO is a community service of Antioch College for the Miami Valley and beyond. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook, and we'll see you at the open house.